Excellent. Thanks, Nick. Now, do we still have Joel on the line?
Yeah, Joel fell asleep.
Joel, are you still there?
Maybe still.
He might be on mute. Let's give him a second.
Yeah, I'm here.
Excellent, thank you. Just, you know, feel free to interrupt at any time, Joel. It's the nature of being on the phone. You might have to yell a little to get your point in. Okay, so moving into our regular agenda, we've already approved it. We had our public hearing. Now would be the time for any public comment. Do we have anyone that signed up that would like to speak at the beginning of our meeting? Yes, sir.
I signed up.
Oh, come on up. You're first on deck.
I was hoping there would be more council people present. Are there any council people?
They left. Oh, no, we still have one. Excellent.
So this is a comment that is a rhetorical question. I'm Jim Stetzer, 39-year resident, Lion Creek, older than glaciers. I learned a lot tonight. One of the things I learned was actually confirmation that this body, I think quite properly, asked for guidance from our city council on an important subject and didn't get the guidance. So I have to fact check here. Did I hear you, Madam Chair, say that this commission made a motion to the city council to review alternate sites for any parking structure? It sounds like you never got an answer. I'd like to confirm that you didn't get an answer, if that's true. And if you didn't get an answer, can you tell the community why not?
We did, in fact, send a memo. We voted on that, and a majority of commissioners felt it was appropriate to send a memo asking the council and mayor to look at alternative locations within Lake Forest Park for a parking garage. We did not receive an official response. There were some informal conversations that took place, but no official response or direction. There's also been some different points of view on what our task is, whether or not we're to be designing for a 300-stall garage, whether it should be underground or not, you know, how much of a burden should it be or shouldn't it be for Sound Transit. And so I think some clarification on that would have been helpful too. I actually combed through notes that we've received in the last few years, and the only formal sort of guidance that I could locate or put my hands on for our full body of work was from the April 9th, 2019, and it included a cover letter and then specific questions for Planning Commission review, and that didn't offer us any specific guidelines for the parking garage other than, would it be appropriate to read this verbiage? Is that useful? Let's see, the Planning Commission should consider the following questions related to ensuring future resilience in parking and transportation. What's the appropriate facility for accommodating current and near-term parking needs? How should the city and other agencies position their policies and investments to respond to possible decline in parking needs? Can the city and its partners create a shared use parking facility? And in the event of a decline in parking demand, could the city and its partners repurpose the parking facility for other uses? So that was the extent of the guidance. So I hope that answers your question.
Matt, can I comment on this question about that? In that letter that we sent to the council about looking for alternatives, we also requested that they meet, if you remember, with adjoining city councils and mayors so that collectively they could maybe come up with maybe a better place, not just the mayor and city council trying to find a better place, but we thought we could get other communities like Kenmore or Shoreline
right.
to find where else to go.
Where might I just say, as a matter of public record, where folks could review that memo?
Well, I believe it was a motion.
It was a motion.
It was a motion that was forwarded to your liaison, Councilmember French, who then passed it on to the council, which I guess the most specific reference to or record of it would be in the
meeting minutes.
Well, the meeting minutes are pretty summary for the council, but you could go back and actually see that meeting on the city's website.
Listen to the audio. Yeah. Do you remember what date that was? It was at some point.
Yeah, we can figure that out for you.
Okay. Yeah, that'd be great.
Could you make the follow up on my question? Could you make the public aware? I looked on the website and didn't find anything of that nature. So, jimstetzer@gmail.com.
Sure.
Thanks.
Yes.
Can we just ask? He was there.
Well, Tom was the liaison in that case. I don't know if he could put his finger on the date that happened.
No.
Yeah, what happened to the city minister?
Would you mind coming up to the mic?
Sure. Happy to do it. That was city minister Hill communicated that to the council. I had to leave early to take care of my daughter. So I was here, I think, until about 8:30, and that was one of the last things we did at that meeting. So it was communicated to the council by City Administrator Hill, and it was discussed, I believe, twice formally. So that was it. There was no action taken. So it was. I think your recollection is correct that there was no memo, that there was
just a motion.
Just a motion. It'd be on the public record. I don't know specifically. This is going back quite a ways.
Let us see if we can find a date that you could narrow down what part of the meeting that was. Like you said, near the end.
Thank you. Any other public comments?
Yes.
Since I didn't use 3 minutes, and I did, but I did say I was hoping there were city council members present. Please don't leave. And our deputy mayor, is she out there?
Yeah.
Because part of the question that I asked was whether or not the city council had responded to a formal motion that alternative sites be selected for a garage. I confirmed with the commission that they made such a motion, and part of my question, and I had hoped that there would be council people present, if you didn't receive an answer to that request, do you know why?
Can I just interject here? I think as a out of just sort of courtesy for the commission and what we've agreed to in the agenda, typically public comments, we hear that, but this is starting to bleed a little bit into a discussion.
I just want to make sure that there are community members, there's people in the community who wonder why the city council never responded.
I agree. And the council does have a meeting this Thursday. And then we have several, I counted three in the room right now, so I don't want to cut you off, and I'd love to be part of that conversation, but I think we need to move on.
I'm not too far.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, Jean Robbins, 40-year resident of Lake Forest Park, member of the Stewardship Foundation. I'd like to thank Jim for bringing this issue up. I think just in talking with John LeBeau recently, it's time for the city council to ask to re-engage with the neighboring communities to look at alternative sites. My fantasy is that there would be a parking garage above McDonald's at 145th and Lake City Way that would benefit McDonald's. It would have your parking garage. It could be a big ugly block there and nobody would care. Just a thought. And just think McDonald's would benefit. And then my other point is I'm really concerned about the shape of the parking garage if it were to be in Lake Forest Park. I was on the Vision Task Force, the Mayor's Vision Task Force, and we spent a lot of time looking at how to not have a big block. And I'm wondering if instead of having a design review later, can it not be put into code that there will not be a monolithic block of a parking garage, but something that's stairs down back, maybe starting where the current buildings are, below the UW Medicine and going back, so you obtain your numbers, but you don't have that visual effect. So just if that can be put into code, rather than maybe an afterthought that could be brushed off, not taken seriously. It was a real big point in the vision development. And also, could you also put in things about green roofs and green walls? Again, if it's not in code, where's it going to really have weight? That's my 2 points. Good luck, and you guys are awesome. Thank you, and good night.
Thank you. Did anybody else want to speak during this part of our public comment? Okay, go ahead, Mike.
Thank you, Mike Dean, citizen. Thank you for that community comment. I wanted to thank you for making sure, for letting the public hearing go more than 1 hour. When I had heard proposed before the Planning Commission meeting, I was worried that you were going to try to fit all those people within 1 hour, as we saw it didn't quite work out. So thank you for making that more than 1 hour and letting that go into your regular meeting, regular special meeting. Also, there was an opportunity after the Planning Commission meeting, whether they came up with a motion or a memo or a motion that was going to turn into a memo, to give to the City Council for the joint meeting with Shoreline, Lake Forest Park, Kenmore. There actually was a meeting already scheduled, and they were just about to work on the agenda for that. And I recommended it to the City Council that you throw this thing that the Planning Commission came up with, and they chose not to do that.
Thank you. Thanks, Mike.
Thank you. I'll be brief.
Could you state your name and your...
Yeah, my name is Silas Studley. My family, I moved here with my family 2 years ago, started here on the hill. Thank you. You guys are doing a good job, as far as I can tell. I have to say, the hill over here where we moved, there's no sidewalks. And I would feel much safer walking down here with my kids if there was a sidewalk for us to walk on. And I think that probably a lot of people up there drive down to the town center just because of that reason. So we need less parking spaces down here if it was walk safe.
Yeah. I want to point out, just since you are newer here, there is a Safe Streets initiative that our community went through some time ago. Look to see where, in terms of priority, your street might have fallen in that mitigation.
Yes, thank you. I know,
sure. No problem.
Sure.
Yeah. Sure, thanks. Anybody else? Okay, well, here we go. Now, I have to apologize for not managing our time a little better last time, and we ended at 9:30, and I did that without your permission. So we've got about 40 minutes, maybe let's call it 30 minutes before we then have to, we'll also have public comment at the end to try to end on time. Unless we feel like we're all interested or able to stay, you know, a few extra minutes. So just want to kind of, I guess, make my intentions clear that I'm going to work to have us wrap up on time since we started at 6.
Well, we weren't mad at throwing stuff at you. Anybody's mad at us.
Well, that's still, it's part of my responsibility. So, all right, old business. When Joel and I talked, Joel, feel free to chime in here. I'm just going to summarize that our goal at this point is to wrap up our recommendations for the parking, the code, recommended code for parking structure, the design guidelines, and this application process. And our hope was to be able to do that before the expiration of the moratorium. However, given I think some needs that we have to reflect on what we've heard in the public hearing, as well as some interest by commissioners and the public in making some requests for an extension to the moratorium. I'd like to, and I think Joel would like to better understand where we feel like we still have our sort of our biggest topics yet to discuss relative to the code. We all received the documents on February the 4th, and I'm hopeful that we've all had a chance to read through them thoroughly and think about topics or sections that we feel like we still need discussion around. And so I wonder if, I don't know what the best way is to do this, but I'd like to get a sense of particular maybe sections of the code that we do still want to discuss so that maybe we can prioritize that, and unless somebody has a different recommendation. Yes.
I don't know, they're not a specific recommendation, Manny, but I'm really feeling like I need to digest the public comments.
Great.
And I would really appreciate a discussion with the commission about the feedback, the comments that we got. You know, just so we can work out what we think, you know, how does it, you know, steer, change any of our thinking on it.
And I think that's what I'm getting at. What did you hear? How does that mesh with, you know, everything that we heard was relative to some aspect of the code. So where is it that we still need discussion? Where would you like to start? That'll help. I know for a fact we're not going to get to a place where we're ready to make recommendations today, but we do have a meeting that we'll be planning for next week. We have an hour, you know, some time here this evening, and I just want to try to tackle this in some sort of order so that we hit everything and don't spend a lot of time hopping around, I guess.
I think in general we do still have a lot of work left to do on the draft, in the sense that we still have whole sections that need to be filled in, topics that we haven't gone back to yet, you know, the general town center code for that portion of the site, not the parking garage code, but all of those discussions around density and open space and, you know, items that we know we haven't gotten to yet. Tonight, I thought it would be helpful if we did stay focused on just the parking structure code, because that may be all we have time for, even if that quickly to discuss, and that was the bulk of public comment was about that. And then we'll have to pick it back up next week.
I agree wholeheartedly. I'd like our discussions to stay very focused on the parking structure, since that's what we have made a commitment to deliver, despite what we've heard in public in the hearing. I hope we'll all, you know, come back to those and reference those when we get to work on that. So relative to what we heard about the parking structure, maybe since there's two basic bodies of work, the parking structure and the you know, the application process, maybe we can start with the parking structure. Yes, sir.
Madam Chair, yes. Just as a reminder, since it is going into the discussion of the parking garage, I will recuse myself from the discussion based upon my appointment with SunTransit.
Thanks.
So you just kind of asked for points, and so that we might discuss, and I'm just kind of remembering that we never really discussed buffers, the kind of, we just haven't gotten there. We haven't discussed bikes or any of the regulations related around that. Our discussion of bonus, I think, probably needs a fair bit of work, and then from the meeting today, I feel like the process needs to be rethought as well.
TJ, can you elaborate on that just a bit? The process needs to be rethought in what respect?
Oh, so in terms of particularly, I sensed within the community a lot of skepticism at the design review board, and particularly aspects like them all being appointed by the mayor and two of them being potentially outside of Lake Forest Park, and in particular, in comparison to the previous way of doing it, where you had the city council directly involved, I had not seen, at least in that detail, the previous process, and I heard a lot of people kind of in favor of that, and I realize there's been some changes, but I don't think we've had, at least I feel like I have new information, not just from the public, but about what that process is, that makes me want to rethink the way we're setting up that review, when we're doing it, who's doing it. Does that help?
Absolutely. Thank you. You know, I think there's, you know, three pieces of feedback that stand out from the public. One is a large contingent that doesn't want it here at all, which really is not something the Planning Commission can really address. And the second one being the height. There was pretty strong consensus that 60 feet seemed out of scale. And the third thing was what TJ just referenced, which was the process. People seem either confused by the new process or preferring elected officials in the old process. So I think that, personally, I agree. I think we need to talk about that in more detail. And then I think we need to readdress the height issues.
I feel like I heard the same thing regarding the process, and I'm wondering if tonight we can table discussion on that process, especially in light of some new information we received yesterday or today. On the methods that had been used previously when an application was placed with the city under our current code. I'd like a chance to look at that and understand what these artifacts sort of might offer to us in the way of reflection combined with what we heard at the hearing. So it just seems to me that to keep ourselves focused on either the process or the garage, I'd choose to take the process at our next meeting for the reasons I just stated, and then focus our any discussion we have tonight on some of these topics with the garage. And if I might, you answered my question, TJ, in terms of you were saying buffers, bike regulations, height were topics you felt like we still needed to discuss. And just in thinking about what the community had to say, I heard a concern that's come up in our conversations a few times about traffic studies and consequently mitigation. And I don't know if we've adequately addressed that in the code. I'd like to add that as one area that we still need some discussion or requirements around a traffic study. Any other parking garage items?
I agree, traffic study will come up. If there is an official application to construct a parking garage, they would have to do their own SEPA environmental compliance, and as part of that, they would need to do a traffic study. Essentially, the city can say, in order for your application to be complete, you need to provide a traffic study, and can, through that vehicle, require various kinds of mitigation. So while I agree it's important, I'm not sure what else, aside from that requirement, we can add, but it's good to discuss.
Are you suggesting that a SEPA is required no matter what for the project, whether it's actually explicitly stated in the code, it has to be done, and that a traffic study is automatically part of SEPA?
If I can respond to that.
Sure.
We can require a project level SEPA. So the applicant probably is going to point at the EIS and say, well, that was a study, but we still have the ability, because their project's not going to be exactly like what was studied in the EIS. So we can say we need a project-specific SEPA checklist that we can review and require mitigation based on the impacts that are revealed from that.
Thanks for that clarification. That's
deep, quick question about that. And so where does that go exactly?
Where does it go?
Oh, yeah, where would we put that?
We talked about that a little bit today, Christine and I, so we actually developed a kind of an idea about how that might occur. So just the enabling legislation for SEPA, that's sort of that second bullet there, that gives us the authority. But if we wanted to have like a fallback position, we could, you know, say somewhere in the major town center review process that a traffic study would be required for any project over 70 square feet or something like that.
So, Steve, this is Joel.
Yes.
I agree with what everyone said about this item, and I think we should just somehow include it. This is a requirement, because, you know, why leave it open-ended and to interpretation if we can just state it clearly? Mm-hmm. And at least we're on the record to the council that we think this is important to have.
I've seen a lot of head nodding, so. If there's a consensus,
maybe we can just all agree on that.
Do we need more discussion on that, or do we all agree that we would like to require a project specific SEPA for any new construction in town center or
any major town center?
For any major town center project, and is a traffic study embedded within that, or do we also have to indicate that a traffic study is?
Well, what I was recommending would be we just say in the code that. We don't talk about necessarily talk about SEPA, just that any project over this size would require a project-specific traffic study, and so we can bring some language next time.
One other point. I think we don't want to make that to the exclusion of anything else we might do that the city would have the authority under SEPA to do. Right. So even though we're requiring this very specific thing, it's not the only thing that we should be able to require if, you know, if the project there.
Yeah, we can make it more open-ended. Any special studies that deem necessary.
And then I was just thinking about the SEPA component, the requirement of that. Does that sort of play into some of the comments that we heard tonight with water table issues and so forth? If we don't have a project level SEPA that's required, then do we, what would the disadvantages be?
I think, you know, water table issues are going to be handled in the engineering of any project.
No, I understand. Specifically, Rachel's got expertise in this. I was curious. You know.
Well, in a SEPA document, they'd look at water resources, including surface and groundwater. So they would need to, at least in some way, review potential impacts to groundwater, which would include, you know, if you're digging down into groundwater, and then there's all kinds of, you know, other permits that become involved. Not just from the city, but sort of state-level water resources. And then, but then it is separate from the CEQA process, would have to be
the engineering that would result from that.
Yeah.
So it sounds like right now, based on the conversation, that Sound Transit, for example, could make an application to build a garage, rely on the non-project specific SEPA that's already been done, but not have to do a project level SEPA? Is that, could you clarify that?
I thought we were just saying that we would clarify that a project level SEPA review would be required.
I thought that's what we said too, but Steve was saying he was going to the language just to require a traffic study.
SEPA can be required on any new commercial building, so we don't have to say that. We just need to say, in the case, if something is the threshold of major review, it special studies may be required, including traffic study.
So my one kind of, I guess, concern related to this is that it seems like if you do a traffic study after the project has been proposed, it's good for mitigation. It isn't necessarily good for information around planning. And so it just isn't helpful if for the guidelines that we're putting together. I mean, it would be a lot to ask ahead of this, but at the other times, I mean, it's kind of, I guess, I mean, you can use it for mitigation, but it's not going to affect much in the way of planning.
Go ahead, Richard.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. The other thing that Mary makes me think of, okay, I'm sorry. The other thing it makes me think of is that
it's a green light.
It seems to me that the little bit of experience I've had with these SEPA reviews is that it's also important to define what would trigger mitigation, because going from a level of service, just as an example, at an intersection, going from D to F, it's possible that wouldn't trigger any mitigation. So it seems like we would have to be pretty specific, or there'd have to be some, you know, specific trigger or something if, other than just doing a study, there has to be some mitigation, some reaction to some sort of threshold.
Can I just ask again for those of you that have experience with this, is this what the EIS was supposed to address, this idea that there would have been a sort of a traffic study or setting of these parameters at that non-project level? And is this why some of our community is saying this was not, a great EIS that we have, or a flawed EIS, is that it's not giving us that information? Does anybody?
Well, it's really hard to come up with a final EIS statement when you don't have a project. I mean, you're kind of addressing a bunch of potential what-ifs. So, yeah, it's hard.
So, in my experience, a non-project specific EIS does a couple things. It allows
to allows you to be informed about projects that you might want to consider. So you have an idea that you want to build something or you want to create new code. So you go and you do a non-project specific EIS to allow you to gather information about possible impacts of a range of alternatives. And that's been one of the challenges here, is those alternatives have been considered as solutions. So people say, well, you can build 700 units, or you can build 1,400. Those give you, that gives you information about what are possible outcomes, but it also gives you information about the impacts associated with that kind of project or projects as alternatives. And it also considers mitigation if you find that there are significant impacts associated with those kinds of activities or projects that you want to mitigate. There is something, and this is the downside to it, though, is that those non-specific project EISs can be used as an umbrella to allow you to do a specific project, and that if you can demonstrate that the impacts aren't any greater than what's in a non-specific EIS, then you don't have to do your own specific EIS. So it can be a little way that you can sort of slide into the process. And then if people are upset enough, then they challenge the non-project specific EIS to say that it's inadequate. But if you've done it well, you can use that as a way so that you don't, as a developer or an entity doing a specific project, don't have to do a specific EIS because you said it's already been studied. We're not doing 700 units, we're doing 300 units, and you found in your EIS that the 700 units did create significant impacts associated with air, water, land, traffic, and therefore they don't need to spend the money. So it does have the advantage to streamline the process if you find that what you want to recommend is something that whomever it is doing it finds it is reasonable. So as an example, when I worked at the university, we would do non-specific, non-project-specific EISs to consider master planning for the campus. And so if we went out and did a specific project, we would tend to do a checklist because we would say that what we're doing falls within the scope of the already studied projects. So you develop a mass, say you want to build a building that's 5 stories tall, 200,000 square feet, and it's this part of campus. And you'd say, well, it's already been studied in that sort of concept. So it has its pros and disadvantages, depending upon your perspective.
Thank you for refreshing us on that. I remember hearing about this before and sort of walking away with a concern that that the premise of the traffic study in the EIS was based on this, that 700 units were already here, and for each increment up, it found no significant change, but they didn't study from zero. So I think this just validates what we're asking for, which is that we would like to see project level, not just for the parking garage, but likely for the site, project level analysis and traffic studies and so forth, because of the basis that our EIS established had issues that we weren't able to get resolved in terms of questions and good information. So, yeah.
So, Steve, I'm sorry, am I interrupting someone? I have a question for Steve Bennett.
Go ahead, John.
Steve, you know, in light of what John just outlined, I mean, isn't the proposal that you're going to work on to allow for special studies, in particular traffic studies and other studies, with a defined level of application, major project, whatever it's defined as, doesn't that just get rid of the concern that an applicant might claim that it's already been studied? I mean, if we have our own independent authority to require it, we don't have to rely on CEPA for it, then it's in the code, we can do it.
I think that's a fair statement. I mean, I think we want to talk to our city attorney about that. because you know, we can't really require an applicant to fix existing problems. So there's a sort of spectrum of what we can expect to be dealt with in terms of the mitigation. But I think in terms of just having it in there, we can make sure that the exercise occurs. And I don't know, I can't say that we won't be disappointed with what comes out of that study. They may say, well, yeah, we're only doing 300 units, so and there wasn't a problem with that. But, you know, we did say in the EIS, made sure that it said that, you know, that the EIS did not prohibit or did not, would not be basis for saying you don't have to do a project level study. So I think we'll be on pretty solid ground with it.
Steve, can you help me think through this? So, like you just mentioned, we require a project, SEPA, does it, we don't, they do the study, they find that there's some, you know, incremental change they find that there's some impact on one of the intersections. But that's not going to, I guess I'm worried that that's not going to measure things that the community may be expecting is going to measure, like, you know, more traffic coming through, it's harder to drive through the town section. Because I don't think the SEPA would measure that, would it?
Christina, chime in wherever you want, but it's not going to, we can't force them to add another lane to 104, like a mile up from the project. It's not, a relational, it's proportionate, thank you, Nick, to the impact that the project probably would have.
Yeah, I guess, let me just frame my question a little bit better. So, my understanding is that the study would measure things like impact at the intersections out here, so Ballinger Way, Waffle Way, at the one right outside of town center here. But other things like affecting traffic, maybe down 44th adjoining street, that increased 100 cars, or 200 cars going through town center, that's not going to be measured.
So, typically a traffic study would identify certain analysis intersections, and good traffic engineers would consult with the city to make sure that the intersections they're choosing in their modeling are what the city wants to be measuring or wants to see measured in the traffic study. Otherwise, I'll have to go back and add it when the city reviews the traffic study and says you missed these intersections that are really critical to us. So the traffic study will identify certain analysis intersections, and it will consider a future no-build scenario where the project doesn't happen, and then it would consider a future build scenario, potentially two scenarios, depending on if there are different options or phases associated with the project. There's a horizon in here that's typically, I think it's a 20-year planning horizon for the traffic study. So they take existing data that is traffic count data from the analysis intersections, plug it into a model, and then out pops some traffic volume numbers, turning volume, movement volume numbers. And from that, they can determine whether the project is anticipated to cause any of those intersections to exceed the adopted level of service of the community. So in this case, I don't know what Lake Forest Park's adopted level of service is for the intersections. Do know that a lot of cities have moved towards E, which is the second
worst.
That's the least functional classification. While still functioning technically on the level of service scale.
And I think what will come out of it, and maybe getting to Richard's question, is what kind of what scale of mitigation can we anticipate from these traffic studies?
Right. So,
so you know, in my experience, you know, it's been to add an extra, you know, right turn only lane to an intersection. Have you seen a higher magnitude from the kind of development we're expecting?
So different kinds of mitigations. I've seen signalization of an intersection that wasn't previously signalized or stop control if it wasn't previously stop controlled. A turn pocket of some sort is common. It also could include some pedestrian features like new crosswalk and flags. There are a lot of different options, and it's going to be based on the traffic engineer's recommendations based on the potential impacts. But typically, you're only going to be able to make a solid case for requiring mitigation when you have modeled traffic that exceeds your level of service or presents some sort of changed, more dangerous condition for bicyclists or pedestrians.
So then, I think Richard was also, correct me if I'm wrong, asking them, can they look at the internal, I don't know what they're considered, private roads?
The internal circulation?
Internal circulation. That can be requested to be included? Is there any kind of...
Well, I think that's, you know, as... when I'm talking to the applicant, that's going to be my first line of inquiry. Is there a way to make if you're going to add whatever it is, the garage or some new commercial residential building, how are you going to deal with the fact that traffic is backing up in the middle of this? What can we in the EIS we studied the possibility of another major, access road through the town center at some point. So I would think that would be where we would go immediately with the traffic engineer and the applicant. How are you going to deal with the situation? Can you add an exit or entrance off of the site to address that very concern?
Yeah, I think that it could definitely be counted, and I'm sure that there's an effective way that it could be model. There's not necessarily going to be an adopted level of service for a private intersection like the four-way stop here in town center, but I think that the city and the traffic engineer could come up with an effective way to understand potential impacts and recommend some mitigation strategies.
So if a study was done and it didn't impact the level of service on an intersection, then there sounds like that would be difficult to have a developer actually do some sort of mitigation.
Yeah, to the intersection. But I think we would, it would be appropriate to pursue some if you can show that there is a peak addition to getting out of the site, then it adds to the situation. I don't see why we can't say, study what's going on there right now and figure out what is the backup on that intersection. So it may not be the main intersections. It may be maybe the problem. It seems like you can address the idea that while this intersection isn't getting worse, we have a solid gridlock all the way through the town center already. So how do you address that?
Is that something that we can make more formal, Steve? So it sounds like it's a best practice. I mean, what you're saying makes a lot of sense, that would be your first line of questioning. But I just wonder if that's something we can make more formal.
Yeah, let us give that some thought and see if we can come back with a proposal.
That was going to be one of my questions, but my other question was going to be, you mentioned specifically that we haven't adopted service and that mitigation could be required if that adopted level of service wasn't met. What about if we just have a decrease in the level of service, even if it's a decrease that is not as bad as barely functioning, which is our adopted level of barely functioning is okay. But are all of our exit intersections currently at level E and barely functioning, or do we have intersections that are actually better than barely functioning? functioning, and could we require that those better than barely functioning intersections still remain better than barely functioning?
So let me state once again as clearly as possible. I don't know what Lake Forest Park's adopted level of service is. It could be better than E. Almost certainly, you definitely have intersections that are performing at a much better level than that. Typically, your smaller residential intersections aren't going to have traffic volumes that would be anything less than level A or B, but your busier intersections, like down here at Town Center, are more likely to be performing at a less functional level of service. So the case for mitigation becomes more difficult if you're not causing causing traffic to exceed the adopted level of service. Most of the traffic studies that I've seen have not recommended mitigation if the project will not cause a degradation of the level of service beyond the adopted level of service. So I think that might be something that could be dealt with through
SNCA. Well, I think we, to make this discussion productive, we need to get you some more information about our adopted levels of service, whether they apply to intersections or they're just for segments, which is what I remember the comp plan having. That, you know, 104 has a certain level of service between here and there.
So what I'm hearing is that to facilitate this conversation further, we need to do a little homework, and you'll do that and be prepared to present it at our next meeting. I'm also watching the clock, and in terms of what I've heard so far, it looks like we would like to have the time to explore buffers, bike regulations, height, and continue this conversation around required studies and this information. Is there anything else that we want to add to this list? And this is not your last chance. If you think of something, you know, as you retire for the evening, I would certainly invite you to email myself or Joel or Steve with that so that we can plan our next meeting accordingly, what we needed to discuss. But I am going to encourage that if anybody has any last comments, that we start working towards wrapping up this meeting and begin setting our agenda for our next meeting. So Rachel first and then Ira second.
My comment is just there's the areas of focus within the freestanding parking structures code, but if the next meeting is going to be our main last pass that we should pass through quickly, even on the things we think are settled, we should be doing a read through of that section and saying, yep, okay. This we have to discuss, yep, okay, this we have to now discuss.
Right. I think that's sensible. I just propose that we likely spend our time focusing on these key topics, and then as the last item, you know, do that sort of wordsmithing and things that don't require a lot of discussion or any discussion that we could have a final read through, but maybe initially stay focused on the topics that require discussion.
I'm sorry, I just want to acknowledge that we did get some specific feedback from Verlon Geyer about the design of the project.
I don't know why it's not picking you up.
Something that Rachel's doing.
We
did get feedback from Merlin Geyer about some things with the design review process as well that we should, when we get there, we should.
Absolutely. Yes, sir.
So the moratorium is scheduled to elapse on March 12th, which is 30 days from today. I don't think that we've adequately covered the design issues or the code amendments that would be appropriate for the town center before the moratorium will lapse. So I would like to make a motion that we ask the city council to extend the moratorium for another 6 months to allow the planning commission the adequate time to look at the issues for the town center and to give the public time to understand what we're talking about. It's a misfortunate that we continue to have 700 units in our discussion. I don't think anybody's going to support 700 units. It is sort of like red meat in front of the the dog that is unnecessary, but I do think that it's important that we do consider the issues that are before us, because we haven't really put together a coherent code revision for the town center itself.
So your motion is to request a moratorium for all the reasons you listed.
For 6 months.
For another 6 months?
Yes.
Okay.
Seconded. So,
any discussion? Yeah.
I don't disagree. I would appreciate the chance to have City Council liaison at the next meeting to at least give us an update on their on council's thinking about the timeline. It seems like it would be friendly to have that interaction, and then we may still end up doing the same motion requesting that they do that, but I feel a lack of communication from council, at least in the past few meetings, so it seems like that would be diplomatic, at least to hear. I would like to understand what council's current thinking is on the timeline, and if they're already planning on extending it, then doing this seems superfluous.
I think it's still important, even if the council chooses to do it, because it expresses to the community two things. One, that we've heard them, and two, that we have considered this and we consider ourselves to be an important body that needs to be heard by the City Council. Not that we are just taking direction from the City Council, which they may choose to give us. The other is that the City Council, in order to have the moratorium take effect, will need to have this brought up in several meetings. And they have another meeting coming up on Thursday, so I would not think that it would be advantageous to miss the opportunity to express to the council that they should be talking about it now. And finally, our liaison is that. The liaison is more of a from us to them, although sometimes not adequate. But from them to us is not something that our liaisons, in my experience, been on the commission for many years, really expresses the reasons that they don't want to speak for the council. So I would still urge that we pass a motion to ask the City Council to extend the moratorium for another 6 months. I respect your approach and willingness to always engage the council in a very positive.
I will point out, too, though, if you haven't seen it, the council's work session that's from 6 to 7 before the regular meeting, the only item on their agenda is to take our draft documents and presumably discuss them. I didn't know they were, I just saw this when the public, or when the notice came out from the city, and it has the documents that are associated with that work session are our draft documents. So they are taking it up and discussing it, and in terms of this discussion right now, I do think that we have struggled with a lot of things, basic assumptions from which we're making decisions and so forth, and I think the council could be helpful in that, but that is for them to, you know, if they're leaning on us for recommendations, they can also request a joint meeting or, you know, and again, I was surprised to see that their work session is about our draft documents without us sending anything. So I think that there's some missed opportunities for exactly what you're asking for, you know, from the other direction. So any other discussion on the motion that's on the table?
Yeah, I just, sorry, just on that topic that you were just talking about, I would like to see a something in the agenda with our council liaison report to report to the commission.
Like a standing?
Yeah, I've seen that in the past, and I think that would be really helpful to make it more formal.
Is that something that, I guess let's deal with the motion. I like that, but I have another procedural thing. For the motion that's on the table, do we have any more discussion? All right, all those in favor of formally requesting an extension, a six-month extension of the moratorium to the council, say aye.
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 All those opposed? Pass. Joel, we didn't hear you. Are you aye or nay? Oh, okay.
I'm abstaining.
You're abstaining, okay. All right.
Can I get a final count on that?
That was everybody here said aye and Joel abstained.
Right. Sorry, Manny, that was a motion.
I abstained. I didn't say nay. I abstained from voting.
That was a motion to make a formal request of the city council to extend the moratorium by 6 months. Who will communicate that? Is that something where we need to write a memo, or is that what happens?
Well, I'm going to send it to city administrator, your council liaison, and the mayor this time. And because I don't really think it's my place, other than if there hasn't been forwarded, I will tell them that on Thursday. At the work session, which I did inform you guys about a couple of meetings ago, when we were talking about scheduling that we needed to do something. It'd be good if we did something on the 11th, because that was going to be going to the work session on the 13th.
That's our okay. Given the time, I think we have an agenda or plenty of meat for our agenda next time. In terms of your recommendation just now, Richard, I think that's appealing. Is that something that we need to agree on, or can we simply insert that?
I think it'd be helpful. I guess I don't know how formal it was. I just remember when Semra was our liaison at the beginning of my term, she regularly gave us more of an update and back and forth, and maybe she just did that voluntarily, but just
is that something that we can just add then? Do we need to have any discussion around that? Okay, so I'll take that up with Joel as we look at our next agenda. I also wonder, do we need to have discussion, or can we just ask that out of our current working drafts that the 700 be removed? Is that something we have to?
If there's a consensus, I'm happy to remove it. I just haven't received that direction yet.
Is there any discussion that's necessary here, or does everybody?
I just say.
No, I agree. It should be removed.
It's the same as other sections we haven't talked about yet. Is that should just be blank until we talk.
And there's no straw man on the other one, so it doesn't seem sensible that there was a straw man inserted on this one either. It's just,
well, okay.
Thank you.
Yeah, we should have seen that direction earlier.
Well, it just appeared to me again. Yeah, we should have at last meeting. Okay, so if it's okay with all of you, I'd like to move us to, let's see. Oh, we didn't confirm next meeting date. Sorry, I skipped over this. Are we set then for the 18th?
Well, I looked at the doodle poll today, and I've got five. One's an iffy on the next meeting.
Right.
Rachel.
Rachel, you are iffy. Are you good on the 18th?
Yes, if me.
I can't make it on the 18th.
Joel can't make it.
I can't make it on the 18th.
Okay, so, and Mark can't commit yet either, so. So yeah, we've still got. We've got five. That's what.
Yeah, this is an important conversation. Is there any way for those of you that can't be here to join by phone? No. Joel, can you join by phone?
No, I have a meeting. I could make it on the 19th, but next week.
Staff, can you make it on the 19th?
Is that one of the dates we proposed?
No, it's not, but
okay.
This came up in our email exchange, too, yes. In terms of having everyone available. And so mm-hmm. Anyway, can you, because is everybody available here at the table on the 19th?
The 19th, and that's a Tuesday?
And I know Joel was available.
It's a Wednesday.
It's a Wednesday.
It's a Wednesday. Are you available on the 19th?
I can't currently commit to any future dates.
Okay. I'm available on the 19th.
Okay, so we have a quorum, yeah?
Yeah, 19th works here.
Okay, we'll make it work.
Work here? No, the whole week is done. Oh, you're out, okay.
Okay, it looks like we have at least six, or maybe even one more. So
we'll confirm this.
So,
go ahead.
Can I ask a specific question, Steve? Sure. Will we have an answer from the city council on this question regarding the moratorium by the 19th?
That's out of my control, Joel. I can't confirm that.
Does the city council anticipate discussing our request this Thursday?
We can make sure that the issue is brought up, yes. But I can't.
It would be super helpful and really respectful of our time if they could respond.
I'll pass that along.
There's three of them still in the room.
In the interest of time, it looks like we have the most number of us that can be available next week on Wednesday the 19th. So maybe we can confirm this over email, or shall we? Can we pencil it in now, or are you available?
As far as I know, I'm available.
Okay.
But
I say pencil in.
Okay, so next meeting would be February 19th from 7 to 9. We'll provide a call-in number for anybody who may not be able to join us, which I think right now would only be TJ and Mark, right? So, potentially, okay. All right, so any new business? Any reports or announcements?
I don't know if it counts, but I did want to ask, because I believe TJ and I are not personally expiring, but our terms. We started in February 2017. Now it's February 2020. So I just wanted to note that I haven't heard from anybody about being asked to stay on or not.
Well, if you would just write an email to the mayor letting him know that you would like to extend, that would get the decision-making process going. The first. And of course, anyone else is in that situation. I hadn't looked at the your terms recently.
So formally, then the commissioner has to contact the mayor, or the mayor contacts the commissioner?
Just send an email saying that I understand my terms coming to it.
Will you guys be able to do that? Is that fine? Sure. Okay.
But yeah, I mean, you're good to the end of February, that's right?
Thanks. All right. Oh, yes, John.
Just one other thing. Terms for chair and vice chair come up in March.
Great. Hand off the baton. Okay, so public comment. Anybody have anything they...
15 seconds.
Excellent.
Thanks a lot for that vote, the motion. It really worked last time you did it, so I hope it's right. Also, it would be a great idea. It almost sounds like a novelty to have more communication between you guys and the city council. And on 700 units, in a way, that might have been responsible for getting everybody to show up tonight. So it worked once, but take it out.
Thank you for your comments. Julian?
Sure.
Thanks, as always, I'm appreciative of the effort and seriousness you all put in at every meeting, and I always come away enlightened about something that I hadn't fully understood before, so always thankful at the end of the meeting. But I have to reflect on kind of meeting style a little bit, because I think it adds to the time that it takes for you to come to conclusions. And I think that important is that things were discussed tonight, and it kind of wrapped up when there was a murmur of, yeah, I guess we have consensus on that. And that was then followed by restatements of what the consensus was. It was never adopted or acted on by the group as a whole. So then there are kind of multiple nuanced descriptions of what that consensus really was.
Are you talking about the SEPA discussion?
Or in general, about your process. And I think that's an example. But what it leads to then is a little confusion about what's in the minutes. And kind of a revisit of the consensus at the time of the meeting. And it's come out, and you say, well, that wasn't what we really meant. And so then you kind of go through the whole cycle again, and at the whole meeting time, on an issue that really had a consensus that appeared at the earlier meeting. So appreciate your effort, but I know time is short, and I recommend consensus be recorded as a particular statement.
Formalized, okay.
Thank you very much.
Anyone else?
Howdy, Mike D here, citizen. Thank you for the opportunity to comment. Thank you very much for your vote, your motion, your future memo, or whatever it turns out to be. to the council about the six-month moratorium. Just want to remind you that this is labeled as a Planning Commission special meeting, and it wasn't necessarily on your agenda, so you may have to do that again at some point. Maybe at your next meeting, make sure that it's on the agenda and then take the motion again. Just so you know, just trying to be fair. When things go in my favor, I try to say something. When things don't go in my favor, I try to say something. So.
Thanks, Mike.
Thanks, Mike.
Okay, I'll entertain any motion. Not any motion, but one specifically.
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
All those opposed?